Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
6:02 in the a.m. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. What's up, gentlemen? What's up, Edward?
What's going on, man?
Nothing much, man.
How about them Gators?
How about them? Yeah. How about them? Ben McDonald on the broadcast last night bumping his gums about the SEC. SEC winning the national championship.
A couple of cool things I was telling Rob is that this is the first team in college basketball history without a top 100 recruit to win a national championship. And the other thing I said to Rob is I fully believe it. Walter Clayton Jr. said it during the tournament where he's just talking about teammates. This is we're a group. It's not an individual. I don't think they care who scores the basket, you know. And in the key moments, they go to the guy that they expect to get it, Walter Clayton Jr., and he hits that huge three after kind of having a down-scoring game.
You know, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on Florida. But both of those teams, Ed, were teams that don't do it like everybody else do. I mean, you look at Houston. They have seniors there. Like Jeremy pointed out, they got a couple of COVID kids who've been there 5 or 6 years. They don't.
I think Clayton's a senior.
Yeah. I mean, they get the transfer portal to supplement the roster, but they don't build the roster on the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Look, there's a lot of things to like about that Florida team. I just can't get past the way it's so funny that Houston pulls off the unbelievable against Duke. And then turns right around in the last 2 minutes of the game, 4 turnovers, 0 points. And you're going, oh, and you don't even get a shot off at the end to even give yourself a chance.
Yeah, it's a shame. I hate it for them. But.
And I'm even more angry at myself because I didn't make it. I found out this morning what happened.
Well, you didn't.
I was fighting, man, and it's just like, I didn't make it. This damn morning show, you've ruined my life. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
It's sports at night now, man. I'm sitting there and I'm one of those guys. I used to watch everything. When I was working in the afternoon, I didn't miss a game. I'd be up until 3 in the morning watching anything on the West Coast. And now it's like, good luck. If you're on the West Coast, I ain't going to see you.
Yeah, that's a shame. It is. I mean, because I agree with you. Sometimes it's a little bit rough to stay up. Jackson Merrill signs a 9-year, $135 million contract extension. And Baltimore fans are wondering, well, why can't we get Gunner and Adley done? You know why? Because they're not Jackson Merrill. They're Vlad Guerrero. They're 14 years, $500 million. Not Adley, but Gunner.
It doesn't even have to be those. Like, they're going to be in that range. Like, who said it? Kyle Tucker smiling ear to ear seeing that contract that he just got. Because Kyle Tucker leads the National League in every statistical category right now. And I know it's, like, what, 11 games into the season. But the other thing that I brought up, you weren't here yesterday, is like people are like, you got to sign this guy, sign him to an extension. Go look at the Reds. Matt McClain, they went to him and said, I want to sign you to an extension. He goes, I think I'll wait this out.
Yeah.
Because if you're one of those guys that thinks you can get $400, $500 million,
why are you signing extension now?
You can, but there's also the thing about, you know, foregoing some of these years and getting money right now, which you see a lot of the Latin ball players do. Jackson Merrill's the first guy where I'm going, I'm kind of surprised he did it, but I'm happy for him. $135 million is still a lot of money.
It is.
And it's guaranteed.
$400 million is more. And it's guaranteed.
But if you get hurt before that, you ain't getting any of that $400 million.
Got to bet on yourself, man. I don't live that way.
I agree.
Manny Machado got hurt twice and got paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm betting on me.
Ed, what about you? Would you? I think I'm betting on me too, but I understand why guys take the money right up front because you have no more stress from a financial standpoint after that.
It's a tough decision, but I probably bet on myself because it's a tremendous difference if you bet on yourself.
I think this is a day and age, though, of dudes laying it up. Like, hey, I'm not throwing at the combine. All I can do is hurt my stock. Yeah. I'm not doing this. I'm not playing in that game in case I get hurt.
I'm not playing the Cotton Bowl. Right, yeah. Exactly.
But think about this. You're signing through arbitration for $15 million a year. Back in the end of 2020, Soto signed 4 years, just under $80 million through arbitration. $20 million a year. I'm not signing a 9-year contract giving me 15 per if I am Gunnar Henderson because I'm going to make 25 in arbitration.
I agree with you 100%.
I'm not giving you $15 million a year.
And by the way, I don't think Jackson Merrill's necessarily on Gunnar's level, but I think he's going to be a star.
I think it was smart for Jackson Merrill. That same contract is stupid for Gunnar Henderson. No. We're not the same. We ain't the same, dude.
Well, he's going to get one close to Juan Soto.
What, 4 years, $80 million?
No, I mean a big one.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Or the one now. Oh, I got you. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's we ain't the same, man. Good for you. That's not me. I think you have a better chance at Adley getting slightly over that, maybe a $20 million a year, than you do Gunnar signing. Anything closely there.
But you look at what the catchers have signed for right now. And
Big Dumper helps him out.
Yeah, that helps him out. Will Smith contract from the other year. Who is the other? There's another catcher that got paid. Was it Real Muto, maybe?
A guy from Toronto. Big.
Oh, Austin, or Alejandro Kirk.
Alejandro Kirk.
Yeah.
Thick catcher.
Yeah. He's thick. No, but you see this happen from time to time with catchers. It seems like they're easier to get done unless they're going to be difficult for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
I don't see Adley being that way.
I don't either. I don't see him being just difficult for no reason. I mean, you can be difficult because you know you're good. You're going to pay me.
Like Jamar Chase was difficult, but he knew what he was worth, and he's like, you're going to pay me what I'm worth.
Yeah.
And he basically told him that's how it's going to be. But when you're that type of player, you can dictate that.
Was Jamar Chase difficult or were the Cincinnati Bengals? Whose report do you believe on this one?
I don't know, man.
It's Cincinnati. No, I got a feeling other teams, it wouldn't have been as difficult.
I think the Cincinnati Bengals are incapable of doing good business. Yeah. I also think Jamar Chase is a bit of a diva, which I understand why.
What position is he playing?
All wide receivers are divas. Hey, I'm open even when you say I'm not. So
I bet if it were another team, not so difficult. It's the Bengals, dude.
By the way,
I like counting. Hey, you want to take this contract in nickels?
I don't know if you saw the rumors. It's saying that the Browns are going to take, at least this was from Schefter, the Browns are going to take Travis Hunter. I was watching Travis Hunter run routes. Yuck.
Really?
I
didn't see it.
It looked like a kid running in the streets in flag football, or like touch football, where he's shimmy and shake and run left, shake there, run right, shake here. Run.
Well,
like,
tell him to run to the guy the on Buick. The sidelines with a red jacket on a cut.
Yeah, I didn't think. I mean, look, that's one route, but it ain't look all that good.
Yeah, but it's one route, but you know what you know.
I mean, it just doesn't look fluid. It looks so choppy to me.
Well, but Dion anyway. Said he was the best player in the draft other than Shador.
He might be just because of he plays both sides of the ball, but like, is he a... What's the master of none? What is it? The
Jack of all trades.
Is that what he is?
Abdul from Penn State is the best player in the draft.
Well, you know who the best player in the draft is. It's that running back out of Boise State.
Those two. Either one of those guys.
The other guy I'm putting right behind them is Tyler Warren. I'm taking him over Travis
Hunter. Tyler Warren's amazing.
So, I don't know.
They're getting this draft. I just saw him. You're right. He did.
Did you see it?
That little left stutter step.
Like when you watch Devontae Adams took basketball moves and put them into his routes, but they're clean. When you watch him, it's very choppy and jerky.
Yes, he gives you the extra shoulder fake. Dude, I'm not going for that.
They're just
showing it now.
There was a cornerback that you wouldn't even know his name if I told you. It tweeted out and said, "Hey, youngin, talking about Shador. Keep tapping that ball right before you throw it. We're going to jump all over that." Like before you throw the football, he would tap it with his hands and then throw it. And it's like, no. It's almost like tipping your pitches. You can't.
Yeah.
You got to stop that. Anything that's a giveaway, they're going to find it.
410-583-1057. That's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Olds versus Diamondbacks. Thoughts on Zach Eflin's shoulder fatigue? We have that at 6:30, but on the other side, it's a national championship. But was it one for the ages? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan.
6 seconds to go. 5 seconds to Sharp. Top of the key. Lost the dribble. He's got to pick it up. It's scooped up by Condon. Condon secures it. And Florida found a way. From 12 down to the school's third national championship in men's basketball. 65-63, the final. The Florida Gators are the national champions once again.
No, you didn't, Joe. Hey, I want to say good morning to my man, Davon Marshburn. He lives for 602. So thanks for listening, Davon.
I want to say good morning to Davon, too. Before Rob, actually, because he listened.
I want to thank the Academy.
Yeah.
Oh, man, listen, that was a great national championship game last night. It wasn't just a close game, 65-63. Florida wins the third national title.
Might be the best Final Four we've had.
It may be.
All three games. Yeah.
It may be. But this is my question to you two guys. Florida versus Houston, great game. But will it be remembered 5 to 10 years from now? And I ask that because there are players on these teams that we may never really hear from again on the next level. So does that make this game 5 or 10 years from now lost, Ed, because there are no future household names?
That's possible, because as Jeremy alluded to before, like even Florida, you know, Clay Jr. saying, it's a team. They played as a team. They played a different brand of basketball. Houston's physical, defensive team. I don't know if, you know, you're going to have a big star out of here that's going to, you know, tear it up in the NBA. And actually, I think there's other problems, too, I'm going to talk about during Shovels. Like, the officials inserted themselves in that second half terribly.
Yeah. Let's call it one way or the other. I don't care if you call it tight.
Game consistently, yeah.
At one point, there was, I think, Florida had shot 11 free throws and Houston had shot zero.
Uh-huh. There were four fouls total the first half, 26 in the second. Hmm. Both teams double bonus.
It definitely changes everything down the stretch, man.
They called two different games. It was a physical game. Nobody complained in the first half. And then they just, you know, they call a totally different game and the kids have to adjust to it. Like, come on, man.
So the hard part for me is, like, looking at these two teams and watching these guys all year long and saying that guy's a really good player. He's going to play at the next level. He's going to play at the next level. You look at the two teams that were here, you know, Cryer and who's the big there. Now I'm blanking on his name. And then on the flip side, you've got Clayton Jr. and a couple athletic guys. You'd be surprised at who the NBA is going to look at. And just because we fall in love with players, remember when Purdue made their run with the young guard, was it Carson Edwards?
Mm-hmm.
And he was killing everything. Hit that big three in the corner to send Purdue. Like, an amazing run. Everybody's like, oh, my God, I wonder who's going to draft him. And he did get drafted, I think, in the second round, and he never played. So there's a lot of those guys when you look at tweener guards. I think you have a bunch of guys from this game that's going to play basketball professionally. It just won't be in the NBA.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's funny because the same things we say we love – all the things that we shy away from overall. We love a Cinderella, but if you had a Cinderella in Elite Eight, you're complaining about that Cinderella. If you had a Cinderella in the Final Four, I remember, what was it? George Mason was in the Final Four? Man, nobody wanted to see that.
We can go back to last year. It was NC State.
Yeah.
They made that crazy run.
Nobody wants to see that. So you say you want to see it, but do you really want to see it? And I look at this game last night, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a great, great game. But we may look back one day and say, man, it's not – I don't remember who played in that game.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a lot of – even though, like, watching Walter Clayton Jr., and I keep talking about him having ice water in his veins. I mean, he's just hitting big shot after big shot. Could he play at the next level? Sure, he could. But our team's going to give him that opportunity when – I mean, if you look around the league, there's a lot of guards that can score in this league.
Uh-huh.
And when you get to the next level, some of them are bigger, stronger, faster, and it's how you're going to fit in. And, I mean, I think Clayton Jr. is going to get an opportunity, but most of these guys – ironically, the thing is, I think most of the big men from these two teams are the ones that you're going to see at the next level.
Yeah.
And not having great careers, but just being
– solid careers.
Yeah.
You know, be maybe the second big man off the bench and – you know, somebody, those are guys, Ed, that'll be in the league for 10 to 12 years contributing to somebody just because of size.
Yeah, a couple different teams.
The Goons.
Yeah.
I mean, Alex Len is still playing in the league, guys.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can't teach size, man. You know, he's got the work ethic. Evidently, he takes kids' body.
I tried to, but it still won't grow. I was trying to teach it, Ed. It's just the same size.
You're talking to it?
Yeah. Sometimes it talks to me. I'm very lonely. No, but like, again, going back to the national championship, do you think we'll remember this as being a great game or Houston just choking down the stretch? Because
you could ask the same about what Houston beating Duke.
I know.
Did Houston beat Duke or did Duke lose?
Well, there were all the reports that was Duke choked because it was Duke.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's fair because Houston's a good defensive team. That steal with like 25 seconds left, you know, changed the game. Was sealed the game anyway.
Can I advocate on Duke choking?
Yeah.
When I'm pressing you and you have four players in the backcourt trying to break the press, you know what those you also have? Four defenders in the backcourt who's going to crowd the backcourt and not allow you to break that press. They looked as if they never saw press.
You probably have five guys in the backcourt.
Exactly, exactly.
Defending four.
Now, also on the inbound play, how do you not defend the guy who threw the ball in? Those are things, Ed, that if you played this game in January or February, Duke doesn't make those mistakes. So, I don't want to take anything from Houston, but Duke choked. They absolutely choked.
My buddy's a Duke fan, and that's what he says. They choked, man. They choked down the stretch. With Houston, though, four turnovers. You don't even get a shot off at the end of the game. I mean, that's just – it's brutal. And the guy left his feet and drops the ball, and I'm sitting there going, somebody run at that damn thing, please, because he can't touch it.
Can't touch it. It's like nobody knew it until the last second. Florida knew it, but they didn't. So I don't know. I mean, you could say a little bit of both because Florida had to execute, but they were given a lot of – you give the other team a lot of opportunities down the stretch like that, and eventually they're going to cash in. Well, you saw that for Houston, and you saw that go against Houston in two games.
Yeah, Ed's down there in Florida. Ed, did you see that people were camping out in Florida in tents outside of bars so they could get their seat to watch the game?
I did not see that. No.
For bar, not to go to the game, not to watch it, to get to the bar so they have their seats.
I know. No, I get it. Look, I tell you, I was just the number of purchases, and you know me, I gauge everything in life by sporting goods stores. And they were flying out of the Dick's Sporting Goods down here. Like everybody, I was sitting at the other table with just gym shorts and stuff. The Gator gear was, you know, being scooped up big time.
And I can't speak for South Florida because I don't go that much, but I spend a lot of time in that Tampa, the Sarasota area.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you say that Florida and Florida State, more so than Miami, rule that side of Florida?
Oh, I said it to Jeremy yesterday, 100%.
Yeah.
There's no Miami presence here, none.
And I can't speak for South Florida because I don't go there that much.
I'm assuming South Florida is Miami. But you talk about, you know, West Central Florida, Tampa Bay area. You know, it's definitely those two teams. And well, you know, but we get our liquor going to spring training where Jeremy joined us.
Liquor.
There was that heads and tails store right across the street. It's Florida, Florida State gear. How many cities have stores like that other than one in South Carolina?
Yeah, I was about to say this. I only know two: South Carolina and the other team off the dirt road, and Florida State.
Yeah.
Let's go out to Parkville and get Chris. What's up, Chris?
Good morning, fellas. How's it going?
How are you?
Feeling good, man. And a nose win, that's a good thing. And national championship, I didn't stay up to watch either because I love some sleep. But watching the highlights and everything, man, it looked like that was a great game.
Oh, man, if I'm being honest, I'm glad I didn't see the second half with all those damn fouls and having the under. I wouldn't have been able to go to sleep after the damn thing ended.
Chris, who were you pulling for in this? Give me who you were pulling for pre-bracket, and give me who you were pulling for last night.
Well, I didn't do the bracket. Okay. I was a little late this year, but for the Final Four, I'm glad Puke lost, and I'm glad that Florida won. That's who I wanted to come out on top. So the guard played. It usually seems to be the equalizer, but man, it was a close game. So I like that brand of ball better than an NBA.
Oh, that's not even close, Chris. I gotta be honest with you, and I know it's just petty of me. That's me. And I'd much rather see Duke go far in the tournament and lose than lose earlier, because like the disappointment seems greater than
it is greater. And I think I always say,
and I don't like, you know,
I want the blue bloods to be. To be prominent in whatever sport it is, if it's Duke in college basketball, the Lakers in the NBA,
if there's a team you don't like, I don't know, man. Fairleigh Dickinson knocking them off in the first round, or Holy Cross getting you. And
nah, I want to see them Bammers go at least to the Elite Eight and have hope.
Hold on.
I want hope.
I agree with you on the front of, like, I'm one of those guys. I want something to root against. So even if you keep winning, I get to root against you in the next game.
Right.
But I understand people going, just get their asses out of there now. Embarrass them.
410-583-1057. That's the number. Ken McCusick joins us in the 7 o'clock hour. But on the other side, Birds win. But a little bad news at the end of the game. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show. Talking Orioles baseball up next on The Fan.
The Big Bad Morning Show's update from the yard.
That ball is going to leave this building.
Sponsored by Farnan and Dermer, the comfort guys. Call today for an $89 AC precision tune-up and make sure your system is ready for hot weather. Call 410-367-7777.
In the air to right field. That ball is headed for the flag court.
On 105.7, The Fan.
Listen, we won 5-1, played great defense, had a great offensive game. Hadley called a great game. It was a good day at the yard. Unfortunately, had a little bit of fatigue, but we'll see how it feels tomorrow. That's really it.
He went on, as Zach Eflin went on to say, that he felt optimistic about it, but after he gets a good night's sleep, he'll figure out what's going on from there. He's right. Orioles had a very good offensive game. Gunnar Henderson starting to look like Gunnar again. Jeremy, 2-for-4 last night. Adley with the big RBI. Clutch hit by when Ryan Mountcastle starts going up the middle in opposite field. Uh-oh.
Yeah. The other thing I'd say about Gunnar, too, and I know some people were looking at it going, oh, he went 0-for-3, he went 0-for-4. Like, looking at those, go look at the exit velo off the bat. I mean, it's going to work itself out. He's hitting the ball hard somewhere. He's just been hitting it right at somebody. I thought the first home run would come for him last night, but what, did he get two extra base hits?
Yeah.
He had two steals, I know that.
Two stolen bases, yeah.
Obviously a big part in this team moving forward, and you're going to have to rely on this offense the way that the pitching's been, and now with possibly Zach Eflin missing some time. We'll see.
You holding your breath, Ed?
About Eflin?
Yeah.
Yes, big time. Best pitcher we have. So what the injury bug did last year to this team. It started off this year, too, before the season even started.
Yeah.
And you can't lose Zach Eflin.
I want to go back to Gunnar Henderson's stolen bases.
Because
if that dude puts together that type of jump, getting a jump on a ball and starting reading pitches, because the second stolen base was on a curveball count. And it was almost like he read it. That's picking up on the sequence of the pitcher. It was on a curveball count. And it's an easier base to steal on that. If Gunnar Henderson's potentially a 30-30 guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, there's, I mean, when he gets on the base path, and by the way, it came back last night. Thanks, God. Thanks a lot. I missed it in the offseason. Gunnar being pissed off that you walked him again and flipping that damn bat.
Yeah.
What are you walking me for, man? I'm up here to hit.
Melanie Newman sitting in the camera well said, when he flipped the bat, players in the dugout say, he's back!
It's my favorite thing is, I like to joke, he's pissed off for greatness.
Yeah.
Hey, man, this is helping my own base percentage, but I'm trying to lift everything else up. But having that guy at the top of the lineup, and when he gets on the base path, he is an absolute problem. I don't think he gets enough credit for how athletic he is and how good he is on the base path.
You know what I love about Orioles baseball now, guys?
What's that?
The sky has fallen and they're 5-6. They're 5-6, and the sky is falling. It's the worst absolute case scenario by Oriole fans, and I love it. I love it because once upon a time, 5-6 right now would have been, all right, you know they're not bad. It's pretty cool. Now 5-6 is unacceptable. You have to get used to something as a professional athlete and people who cover professional athletes. You're either apathetic or passionate. Yes. You don't want apathy. You want passion. And Oriole fans right now, Ed, are very, very passionate about them.
They are, but this time he drives me crazy. Just, who won the April championship last year in baseball?
We did.
Yeah. I mean, this is like every year we go through this. If you have a hot start, this is it. If you have a cold start, it's the sky's falling. The game goes on till October, for God's sake. Like, just let them play, man. You got a good team.
By the way, I think Charlie Morton pitches a gem tonight. Dare I say it.
For who?
for the Orioles. <Does he pitch? laughs> I think he does, honestly.
He pitches a gym for the other team, Jeremy. It's like he gives up seven runs. So he's going to pitch a gym one way or the other.
Got to keep that ERA around 10.
I think somebody's going to be happy to see him.
I think you're going to see him go six, strike out eight, maybe give up a run or two.
Listen, he's not missing on the strikeout. The strikeout's there.
He just keeps making mistakes, and as an older pitcher, that's what's going to happen. Somebody showed two different pitches coming out of Luis Castillo's hands and said, how do people hit baseballs? Like, it's the same, one went up and one went down, and it's like, you have a split second to figure it out, and Morton can definitely get the swings and misses, but man, does he hit a lot of bats.
It is, by far, the toughest thing to do in sports. It is by far the toughest thing to do, man. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that if you bat 250, it means you get a hit every night going 1-for-4.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I batted 250. I went 1-for-4 every night. Yeah, that's it's the toughest thing, man.
Like looking at it and seeing sometimes when they put these pitches side by side and going, you realize how ridiculous it is. And like there are people sitting at home going, why'd you swing at that? Watch the view from behind the catcher or watch the view from behind the pitcher, and you'll see why he swung at it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's not a strike. Well, when he swung at it, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It started off as one. And like you said, Jeremy, I only have a split second to decide to commit with
a
swing.
Fraction of a second. That's why, like, when we were talking about the toe tap, like, I could see the guys that want the high leg kick that the toe tap works better because you're going to stop. You know, you actually get the feel and go, oh, I don't want to swing here.
Yeah.
Or you can fight one off and foul it off.
But that high leg kick, you committed.
Yeah. I mean, I think it works for some guys, but I think Jackson looks a lot better right now.
Ed, you got to give a lot of credit to the catcher also, because that ball's moving on him too.
Oh, absolutely it is. And he's got a bat swinging in front of him, right? His face. So there's a lot going on for the catcher.
410-583-1057 is the number. I just wanted to throw that lob up for Ed because you know he loves catching.
It wasn't lost on me.
So, but with the shoulder fatigue for Zach, you and I were talking about it. Could it be just dead arm and he needs a little bit of time?
Hope so.
I mean, I don't know if that's best case scenario or what. Is there like maybe a pulled muscle or something in there that he needs to?
I'd even go for that.
And I was telling Rob, if it was a rotator cuff or something, I think he would feel way more pain.
I'm hoping.
But I don't know. I don't have a PhD in anything.
Let's go to Trippy in Baltimore. What up, Trippy?
Hey, what's up with y'all? Hey, Ed, our boy looking good so far. Hey, that boy Bounty. Hey, I might have to get me a Mount Castle jersey because, I mean, man, him did have the same number in high school.
You might want to wait until he gets traded.
Whoa, watch your mouth now. You know what? If he gets traded, I might just go ahead and be with that chain. But look, hey, Jeremy, I was wrong yesterday, man. What'd I say? I don't know. The Orioles might be a smut. They proved me wrong. But I got a question, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, is it just me? I don't like Gunner at me, though. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
we talked about this last week.
Like where?
Leadoff.
Oh, I love because that.
Because if you look at it, the league has changed. And Ronald Acuna Jr., when healthy, bats leadoff for the Braves, their best hitter. Shohei Ohtani bats leadoff, and they'll switch it up with Betts from time to time. But
Kyle Schwarber, who's their best on-base percentage guy for the Phillies,
bats leadoff.
Yeah.
And you see it around the league.
I love it.
It's no longer just the guys that you consider table setters and base stealers.
Well, he stole two bases last night.
But I'm saying, like, you're not – a lot of times, like, you look at a Luis Arraez. Oh, he doesn't strike out. He makes contact, and he steals bases.
Chippy, who do you like batting lead off?
I would rather Setti.
You would? Why?
Because he's hot. And, I mean, like, imagine if Setti get on base. You feel me? Like, we can get a couple stolen bases. But hold up, man. Hold up. My bad. Hold up. Before I get off the phone. Hey, what's up with your man? I don't like him. He give me Marlon Humphrey vibes, man, on the Orioles, man. That boy Mateo, man. I'm looking at him, man. What is, like, let's be honest, what is he good? What are you good for?
Yeah, and what's your boy good for?
I'm just here for the comments.
Yeah. I'm just here so I don't get fined. Oh, man.
Trippy is tripping right now.
Yeah. What's your boy good for?
He stopped everything. Hold on. Hey. He stopped everything. We give it our shovels at 7:15. But on the other side, do you think the decision makers for the Baltimore Orioles are in air quotes win now mode or a air quotes will win something soon situation? Is there any part of you that's worried about the decision one way or the other? Are they squandering this? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. Baltimore Orioles, 5-6 on the year. We know about the tremendous prospects that's been in this organization for about a half decade, about 5 years, mm-hmm. just raising up some tremendous prospects. Some of them were in the organization before then, like Ryan Mountcastle, but we've just seen them come up to contribute to this team in the past half decade. And it's a team that's won 101 games 2 years ago, Ed. Last year, over 90 games and then playoffs with the wild card. And the fans want the next step. And the next step is advancing, going deep into the postseason because they haven't won any games in the postseason in a long time. Do you feel that the Orioles, the front office, are in win-now mode or winning is something that they'll get to when they get to it?
I think the latter, as far as the front office is concerned. I think they're patient and they have a plan, and I feel like they almost don't understand the urgency the fan base has sometimes, where, you know, you put together a great team, now what? You know, we want to see it now. And I feel like they just have a lot of patience, and they just have a process, they go through it, and when it gets there, it gets there, and when it's there, it's going to be good for, you know, they're going to be good for a long time, like they did in Houston. I think that's exactly what they're doing.
Jeremy, based on what Ed said, their track record, let's assume that Ed's right. That's what they're thinking. Based on their track record, is it more responsible for them to continue to go that way, or do they blow things up because the fans want it now?
No, I mean, if you start listening to the fans, we'll all be rooting for a last-place team. You can't. And I'm not saying that to be demeaning, but, you know, there's a reason why when I gamble, I fade what everyone else is doing, because the public's almost always wrong. And in a situation like this, yeah, there's been some bad luck with the starting pitching and all the injuries they've had, and it makes it look even worse with the fact that you didn't go out and get one of those guys. But I don't know who people wanted last year because the contracts that were given out, and maybe this comes to a point where the Orioles have to go, hey, we're either going to get passed up if we don't start spending this type of money. But the contracts the guys are getting are absolutely ridiculous right now. And I'm not just talking about the money. I'm talking about the years, because the back end of those deals are just – they're going to be brutal for those teams.
I look at Vlad Guerrero Jr. and his body. Doesn't look like he takes care of it. I don't know if you're getting 8 years out of that guy.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, baseball's a different sport, but, you know, like, with the fact that I don't think you have to have a perfect body or anything like that to look the part. But I will say this. I think the Orioles are kind of in both. The winning's going to come, but it's already here also. The problem is that people want a World Series, and they want to sell out for it no matter what when they're trying to build a foundation and keep building off of this. And we talked about putting a competitive team out there. What does that mean? It means having a chance to win in the playoffs in September, to me, and that's what I want. I want a team to root for every September. I don't want to be the Brewers, though, where you get in and you have no shot at winning. You know, they do it every year. But I do think that you're winning right now, whether people realize it. They just want more.
Well, you kind of answered my question already. I was about to ask you, do you want a Chicago Cubs situation when they finally ended the curse and then after that did what? Or do you want Milwaukee that you said you don't want? So you'd rather have a Chicago Cubs.
I mean, I want to win a World Series regardless. But again, I don't think it's something it's not a given. You don't get to say, hey, I'm going to make all these moves and it's just going to work out. Sometimes it does. You know, the Rams, when they won the Super Bowl, sold off all their picks.
Got lucky.
And got lucky and won, because the next year it's like, ooh, you guys are in trouble. The same thing you can look in a lot of sports where teams sell out and try to create these super teams in the NBA, and they don't work out. Look at the Suns. Suns are going to miss the playoffs. and they're going to miss the playoffs with the Mavs being in front of them. The Mavs had everybody on their team die this year. So it's unbelievable to look at where some of these teams are. You have to be in contention and to have a shot in this division. It's already a good team. It's a matter of what your expectations are going to be for the next few years.
Different, I guess, from the Brewers, Ed. The Brewers can be in contention in the National League Central and not have a shot.
That division sucks.
You can't be in contention in the American League East and have no shot. Do you agree?
It's a no-brainer. I mean, the National League East, I think people – it's one of those divisions. People say it every year. It's the best division in baseball, maybe in all of sports. But it really is, and it doesn't change. Like, you know, people do with the AFC North, with the Ravens. I don't think that's true anymore. You know, I think there are other divisions that are better, like the NFC North. but people still say it, you know, from a historical perspective. I think the American League East is just perennially awesome. I mean, the Yankees spend a ton of money, and they're always good. The Red Sox look very good. Everybody looks good. The Rays surprise people every year. They do it on a shoestring, but somehow they're always competitive. So, yeah, it's and the Central in both leagues suck. I mean, they're the weakest divisions, but they do. I mean, they just do what they do every year. It's the reverse.
You wonder why. They got major markets in those cities, especially the AL Central. You got Chicago. You got Detroit, Jeremy. Yeah. You wonder, you know, it's not like you have small markets in those divisions. I mean, Minneapolis is not, I guess, a huge market. Neither is Cleveland. But you've got some – Oakland.
I think it's more of who you're competing with. As Ed was pointing out, like all five of these teams in this division have a shot to make the playoffs almost every year. We try to poke holes in the ones that, like, hey, I think Toronto's down this year. I don't like their starting pitching. That's something I said at the beginning of the year. I like their starting pitching better than I like the Orioles right now. But and I don't even like their starting pitching. So when you look at the Central, like you and I are bullish on Kansas City. That's a good foundation that they have right now that they're building around.
Right.
I think Detroit's in a good place. Minnesota, you just never know what to expect from them. Cleveland always has good pitching, but they don't spend any money. So they always do the same thing where it's like, hey, we're going to be really good to a point. Like, I don't want the Orioles to be Cleveland. I don't want them to be Milwaukee. I'd like to see them get further. I mean, Cleveland did go to a World Series, and they lost to the Cubs when they broke the curse, but... that was a crazy-ass series that could have gone either way. Game 7.
Shovels at 7:15. Don't go anywhere. Wait for that. But on the other side, I want to hear from you. Orioles brass. They've done a good job of getting the franchise to this point. But do you think they're in win-now mode or will win-something-soon situation? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan.